So there will just be one side to this argument here today. And with that, Ms. Reichert?
Yes.
You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Katie Reichert, formerly Katie Anderson, as is in the Bill of Exceptions and Transcript. I represent the appellant, Panhandle Collections Incorporated, which is a collections agency in Scotts Bluff. The creditor in this case is Shadron Community Hospital, who assigned an account from the appellee, Douglas Jacobson, to Panhandle Collections to collect upon. The basic facts of this case are that Mr. Jacobson received medical services from Shadron Community Hospital between 2009 and 2012 on various occasions. It was undisputed that he received all the services that Shadron Community Hospital alleged that he had. The district court found that the medical services were provided and that the charges for them were fair and reasonable. However, the district court found that there was no oral agreement between Shadron Community Hospital and Mr. Jacobson regarding a payment plan, and therefore dismissed this case with prejudice.
How were the pleadings set up in this particular case? Was it set up asking for enforcement of this agreement?
It was asking for, Judge, it was set up to show that services were provided to Mr. Jacobson, that he had not paid for those services despite having demand made upon him, and therefore the plaintiff was entitled to recovery for the damages incurred.
The complaint doesn't say that there was an agreement between the hospital and Jacobson that he would pay a minimum amount of money over a period of time in order to reduce this indebtedness?
No, Judge. The complaint is basically based on the theory of quantum merit, where there were services rendered to Mr. Jacobson by the hospital, and therefore the hospital was entitled to the reasonable charges for those services.
In essence, you pled an implied contract under
yes.
the law, where services are provided by the hospital, the patient impliedly agrees to pay those charges.
That's correct.
And that was your pleading, but what happened at trial?
Well, at trial, the evidence did support that, Your Honor. The evidence showed that services were rendered to Mr. Jacobson. He stipulated that all the services he received them. There was ample evidence as to the value of those and that Mr. Jacobson had not paid them. In the argument portion of the trial, I discussed the issue of a payment agreement that Mr. Jacobson had made with Shadron Community Hospital to pay off this balance.
And didn't you say, we're not here collecting on the bill, we're here to enforce and collect on the agreement to make payments?
Yes, I did say that.
And so that's how the district court analyzed the case, didn't it?
Yes, it is.
And so how do we find that to be error?
Judge, there's a couple of ways that pleadings can be amended after trial. And that is if another issue was tried with express consent, which is either by stipulation of the parties, or there was some kind of, it was acknowledged in a pretrial order. There was no express consent in this case to try the issue of an oral contract.
But you raised it, didn't you?
I did raise it.
So how did you not agree to it?
I'm not disputing that I didn't agree to it or that the opposing party did not agree to it, because the opposing party did not make any objection to the entry of evidence regarding an oral contract. My argument, I guess, on that sense would be that a court cannot find consent when the evidence supporting an issue allegedly tried by implied consent is also relevant to other issues actually pleaded and tried. So I guess I would argue that the issue of an oral agreement in this case was relevant to two particular issues that were actually tried. One, how much Mr. Jacobson actually owed to the hospital, being they made an agreement, how much did he pay under that agreement, and as a result, what is the final amount that he owes? And two, it would be relevant as to when Mr. Jacobson breached or stopped making payments. So when did the breach start, and when would, I guess, the statute of limitations begin to toll? When you raise an issue that is not pleaded in your case, the evidence regarding that issue must be solely directed at the unpleaded issue. And I think that the evidence in this particular case shows that the issue of a payment plan was also related to how much did Mr. Jacobson still owe. Ms. Summers, who is the accounts manager at Chatham Community Hospital, explained in detail how many payments Mr. Jacobson had made towards various accounts that he had, and then explained what the remaining balance was. And so I would argue that when the oral contract information was brought up, it would be related to what was already pled, and therefore isn't necessarily an issue on its own. Despite the oral contract issue, I would say that the underlying facts of the case and how the case is pled, the plaintiff is still entitled to recovery based on quantum merit, which was pled in the complaint and was supported by the evidence. There was no dispute that Mr. Jacobson received the services. There was an implied contract. The court actually found that the charges were reasonable. So our position is that this case should be reversed, finding that the plaintiff is entitled to recovery and remanded for the district court to determine what are those reasonable charges. Those would be just adding up what the various bills were, which ended up being about $43,800.
You've mentioned quantum merit twice, but isn't that inconsistent with any type of contract? I mean, typically you plead quantum merit when there is no contract, but now I hear you saying there's either an implied contract or there was an express contract, oral contract.
I think that it relates to an implied contract because quantum merit is based on a benefit being conferred. When services are rendered, this is from Lanfear v. Omaha Public Power District 227, Neb 241. It states, when services rendered to a party and knowingly accepted by him, the law implies a promise on his part to pay the reasonable value of the services. The test in that case is there a benefit conferred? If so, what is the reasonable value of those services? With an implied contract under AMISA, it's St. Joseph's Hospital, the Allied Property 6 Neb App 696 from 1998, that case states that rendering hospital services creates an implied contract between the person being given medical care and the medical provider. So I think the first test of quantum merit is, was there an implied contract? Were there services rendered, and did the other party knowingly accept those? The OPPD case was regarding payment for street lighting, so the facts are a little bit different, but the court held that they did receive a benefit, and therefore they were entitled to the reasonable value of that. Same would be in this case. Mr. Jacobson was, he received the benefit of the medical services. He stipulated to that, and therefore he's obligated to compensate the hospital for the reasonable value of those.
Just one more question for me anyway. In terms of the oral contract that we've discussed on the promise to pay monthly payments, do you take issue with the district court's findings that the terms of that alleged oral contract were not definite and certain and therefore not enforceable?
Yes. I think there was evidence, ample evidence, to show that there was an oral contract. Mr. Jacobson wrote a letter to Chagrin Community Hospital in 2013. It's Exhibit 6 in the Bill of Exception. He made an offer stating he would make small monthly payments, and he asked that the hospital in exchange would not send him to collections.
But the amount of small monthly payments wasn't discussed, was it?
No, the terms of small monthly payments was...
Or the due date of the monthly payments.
Correct. Those were not.
Was there a determination of whether or not interest would be paid?
There was no determination. No, that was not part of the agreement.
Are any of those material issues that make the contract void?
I don't think so, because when he states small monthly payments, the hospital, there was a meeting of the minds between the hospital and Mr. Jacobson regarding what are the small monthly payments. He would make payments between $5 and $10 on some occasions, and Ms. Summers testified that the hospital was always accepting of those small payments as long as he was making them. So I think there's a meeting of the minds that he's going to make some kind of payment. It may be small, but he's going to make that payment. The consideration that was given by the hospital was that we won't send you to collections. Hospital then accepted the offer by accepting those small monthly payments and not sending him to collections until he breached the agreement in 2014 when he stopped making payments altogether. Then,
You may finish your sentence.
Then the hospital waited until October of 2014 to send him to collections. So the hospital upheld their end of the bargain by not sending him to collections as long as he was making those payments.
Thank you. We appreciate your argument here today, Ms. Reichert. Your case is submitted and you are excused. That does bring us to the conclusion of our oral argument session, and we'll go right into a visit with you all. This is where you may ask us questions, not about the cases that we've heard, but just about our procedure in general or anything else regarding the judiciary or the judges, anything you want to know about us or from us. I do know some of you may need to leave, so we'll give you a few minutes for the room to clear.